Welcome everyone to the Peaceful Planet radio show. This is show host Marcia McMahon, and we have a very special tribute program today with the Peaceful Planet in addition to our very interesting series on the Holy Grail. I know many of our friends at BBS and the Peaceful Planet show heard the very sad news about the sudden departure of our dear friend Mattia Michelson. Mattia was a dear friend to me, known for her gift of channeled messages from Archangel Michael. And she had even come on the first show I did with Peaceful Planet when I started my Peaceful Planet show back up just a month ago. Last week, she was scheduled to be on the show, and we had some incredible line outages with our producers, Don Newsom, out in California. During that time, I was on the phone the whole time with Mattia because she had agreed willingly, being the wonderful light worker that she is, to do Archangel Michael messages along with messages from Spirit for our show. And I was planning to do the show all last week and had a wonderful guest lined up, but that isn't the way Spirit worked it out. Midpoint in our week here, I got a call from my dear friend Carolyn Evers, who hosts the Messenger Show, which is coming up right after this, and she said that Mattia had suddenly died. And it was just an incredible shock and grief to hear this, because Mattia and I had been very dear friends and had so much in common with our work with the angels, our readings, our commitment to the spiritual hierarchy. And so I would like to go over some of Mattia's major accomplishments and read her full bio as an introduction to who was Mattia Michelson. And then, because I am a spirit messenger myself and channel medium, I have received good news from Mattia on the other side and would like to share the joy of her message with you before we launch into our fascinating discussion with Mark Amaru Pinkham and Andrea Pinkham about his book, The Guardians of the Holy Grail. So I appreciate the Pinkhams being with us and being patient as we host this special tribute program to Mattia Michelson. So to start out with, this is the bio that she sent me in the email, and I feared that I had lost it, and I wanted to read the entirety of it because it's really the story of her mission from Archangel Michael. Hi, my name is Mattia Michelson, and I am a representative of Archangel Michael. My mission is to help the light workers and star seeds in cooperation with Archangel Michael, who will assist them in understanding their personal missions and contracts with the spiritual hierarchy, and in opening the galactic prosperity gateway while fulfilling their missions. This will help them to move on in their personal development and reconnect with their soul families and I Am presence. Most people know they are here for a reason, and the information I help to bring forth assists in explaining that reason. Now, again, these are Mattia's words. I was born in Johnstown, PA, growing up in Washington, D.C. area, where my wonderful son, Stephen, was born, fulfilling a karmic contract with my ex-husband that freed me to start my journey. I began reconnecting with who I really am and understanding why I was born. A journey that was not easy, but gave me the understanding that my experiences and hardships were created by me before I came for my personal growth and development, and an ability to recognize the pain and hardship that most of us experience while fulfilling our earthly contracts and working out our karmic debts. It's time now to change the path of pain to one of grace and ease, as the Creator's intended. I now work closely with Carolyn Evers, Rona Herman, and the I Am University. I Am University was created under the guidance of the spiritual hierarchy before Dr. Joshua Stone made his transition after fulfilling his divine mission. Gloria Excelsius now continues this work under their guidance. My true mission was triggered after meeting Rona and attending one of her workshops, after which Archangel Michael made his presence known in full force, downloading information and specific instructions on how to proceed with my life. Archangel expressed it was time to fulfill the contracts I made before the embodiment and represent him on the earth plane. There were also contracts made with my I Am presence and the company of heaven. Fulfilling these contracts would allow me to move from the earth plane forever and once again rejoin him and his legions to take my place rightful among the stars from which I came. So I'd like to think about that for a minute. Fulfilling these contracts would allow me to move from the earth plane forever and once again rejoin him and his legions to take my rightful place among the stars from which I came. So truly that is what has happened to Mattia. And although she has left the physical, she is with the company of heaven, and she assures me that all is well, and she continues on in her journey with Archangel Michael. She goes on to say, and these are her words, not from spirit, but from the email, this mission was further accelerated when Archangel Michael requested I read Carolyn Ever's books, Viva Papa and Chaos Before Creation, which cleared obstacles and allowed me to join forces with Carolyn in assisting her to get the spiritual hierarchy's message to the world. Another aspect of my divine mission is to assist lightworkers to get their messages and visions out to the world through spiritually oriented web design, graphic arts, and stained glass in cooperation with Archangel Michael and the spiritual hierarchy. This ensures the highest energy can be brought forth through these images, products, and services so that more people can reconnect with their true self before the end of the age. And she says here in her last words from her bio, may you be enfolded in the love of your mighty I Am presence and remember who you really are. Mattia and Archangel Michael welcome your calls for guidance and understanding of your divine mission. So now I think we can safely say that Mattia is in the arms of Archangel Michael and is standing with the other ascended masters. Before I go on and read a few messages that I have from Mattia, I wanted to mention to our listening audience that if you knew Mattia Michelson and you wanted to call in and give us your thoughts on her fine, you know, friendship or whatever connection you had to her, our number to call in is 877-876-5227, and we welcome your comments about this great light worker. We are looking at her major contributions, and it was just a week ago that we had lost our power on the show. The show couldn't air, and I had Mattia on the phone with me, and we had our last conversation last Sunday. And during the course of that conversation, we discussed her work with Archangel Michael and what she planned for things. And for the first time, I made a connection to Archangel Michael and brought through a reading for Mattia. And so it was a very interesting connection. And during the course of Don Newsom, our producer, having his power out, Archangel Michael came to me with a very special message for Don. So I credit Mattia in bringing to me the awareness of the great, probably the greatest angel that we have working on our behalf, who's been with us since the inception of the planet. And that is, of course, the great Archangel Michael, who is overlighting our program, as I sense Mattia is overlighting our program. As well, I have a very dear message from Mattia and also from an angelic group known as Ra that I'd like to share with you in our tribute to her before we move on to our guests. I heard from Mattia the day after her passing, and I think that she has a very pertinent message that she would like us to hear, so I'm going to take the liberty to read it. And I want to assure all of our listeners that life indeed goes on, and you continue on with the mission that you held, the position that you held while you were here on Earth. And if you are currently in the service of the light and the angels, there is nothing to fear about the so-called transition called death, and that the angels are there ready to catch you when it is your time. Now, oddly enough, too, when I did this reading through Archangel Michael for Mattia, there was no mention of her transition. But sometimes it's very important that we not know the time, our appointed time of transition. And even being psychics, we may sense that there's a change coming. We may sense something like that. But it's usually an ominous thing to contemplate, and so it's usually not given in the course of a reading, and it wasn't revealed to me. But I did bring through a wonderful reading for our producer, Don Newsom. So, you know, we're all here for a reason, and You know, I'm so grateful to have this show to bring out the messages from Spirit and to bring out great authors and others that are doing work in tandem with our newfound spirituality and our special series that we're doing on the mysteries of the Holy Grail. So I'm going to read Matea's message, and thank you all for bearing with me so that we can bring her to the fore and honor her memory in this way. And I connected with her earlier this week, and I'm reading from her message here. I'm hearing you, Matea. Dearest friend, I'm so sorry to hear of your passing. I am utterly stunned with grief. Dear Marcia, do not cry for me, sweet friend. It's me, Matea, and I speak to you about this time of transition. Spirit and the Masters led me to this point in my life, and my mission was over. And that is why when we spoke last Sunday, I did not have much to say about new careers. I'm so grateful for the time that we had on your show and your reading from Archangel Michael. Marcia speaking. Matea, darling, I had no idea this might happen to you. And in Michael's reading, there was no hint. I am dumbfounded. Also, what about I Am University? How is Dr. Joshua? She says, he is in the light of God, as we both know, and I'm going to be working with him from my standpoint here. He was one of the ones who greeted me at my passing. I was in shock myself, not knowing what had happened. I have been through the transition and so glad to be among the angels. Matea, have you spoken with A.A. Michael yet? Yes, we have spoken and met, and in his essence, yes. I am progressing and ask you and all light workers not to grieve. Matea, how can I best honor your life's work and message? And I'm so disappointed you won't be doing shows or readings with me. Your energy was wonderful. Marcia, my dear, I will keep hosting your show from the other side and anchoring Michael's energy for you to keep any darkness away. You may turn to me for coaching on your show and questions. I keep and honor all my commitments to you and Carolyn and the Conclave. On another level, Matea, you obviously made it to mastery. You obviously are ascended, is my feeling now. Matea, yes, I'm being called to work with the ascended masters and angels, just like before. She says here, don't worry about me, Marcia. I'm all right. I will learn new things and expand my light work and mission. And about honoring you and your work, what is most important, Matea? I want to emphasize to other light workers that it's time to wake up. Our work with Yellowstone prevented a total collapse of the earth, and my work was important. Michael thanked me for that. I would like to give you a bouquet of flowers for your graciousness in bringing me forward on your show, and thank you for all your help. My love to all of you, Carolyn Evers, Marcia McMahon, and all others of the Conclave. I will be in touch. Much love, Matea. So, what a wonderful message from our beloved Matea. And because we played two songs at the start of our show, one was titled Gossamer Wings, and that came from a request from our audience. And the other title was Appreciated Angels. Both of those songs are by the former Beatles, John Lennon and George Harrison in spirit, and the work is being brilliantly channeled by Bob Murray. You can go and visit Bob's site at thestarstillshine.com to hear more of the music or to make requests for the show. So thank you very much for listening to our tribute to Matea. And remember that our phone lines are open if you still wish to call in. We have a wonderful author with us and his wife. We're featuring the book, The Guardians of the Holy Grail. And let me read to you the bio of Mark Amaru Pinkham and Andrea Pinkham. Mark Amaru Pinkham is a noted author, lecturer, researcher, and Templar Knight of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, a division of the Scottish Knight Templars. He is the North American Grand Prior of the IOGT and founder-director of the Seven Rays Healing School. In association with Body, Mind, Spirit Journeys, Mark leads Da Vinci Code Journeys to Paris, London, and Edinburgh to focus on the mysteries put forth by Dan Brown in his book. He shares cutting-edge research that reveals the truths behind the Da Vinci Code, as revealed in his fourth book, The Guardians of the Holy Grail, The Knights Templar, John the Baptist, and the Water of Life. Mark, are you with us there?
I'm here, yes. Good afternoon.
Wonderful to have you on our show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here and an honor.
It certainly is, and it's an honor to have you. Your book was really a wonderful read, and the research that you did on the many grail traditions and mysteries was fabulous. Your understanding of the mystic traditions of the East, incorporated that into the Templar mysteries, is just really outstanding. And I would say that, you know, your work is just really interesting. Some of the information you bring forth include, you know, different aspects or legends relating to the Grail, and I was wondering if you could go into perhaps some of those legends about the Grail. I thought Joseph of Arimathea's legend was interesting, and I liked also the alabaster jar that's referenced in the Bible, said to have belonged to Mary Magdalene. I was wondering if you might be able to elaborate on those two Grail mysteries.
Well, certainly, do the best I can. There's certainly a lot of legends related to Joseph of Arimathea and his going up to Glastonbury with the chalice. According to one legend, he was directed there by the Apostle Philip, who he accompanied into France, which was Gaul at that time, and then Philip instructed him to go up into Glastonbury, which he did with 11 others, and they were directed to a certain place to build a chapel to Mary, the Virgin Mary, and within that chapel, according to the legend, they placed the Holy Grail. And according to one legend, they created little huts for themselves around that chapel, which was in a circular shape, and their accompanying cells were also circular, and they made 12 a configuration of 12, a circular 12 around that center chapel, similar to what you might think of as the Knights of the Round Table. Anyway, they existed there for some time, and then they passed away, and a couple hundred years later, there was a couple other monks that showed up, and they went ahead and revived that ancient tradition. The legends don't really say whether they found the cup or not at that point. But
I thought it was actually the two vials, one vial that he collected while Jesus was dying on the cross and another vial that was the sweat.
They were the two vials. Both of them held the blood and sweat of Jesus as we know it. Joseph...
I'm sorry, that all fits into the Arthurian legend.
Well,
later.
Yeah, well, Joseph and Nicodemus and actually Mary Magdalene, they were all present when Jesus' body was taken down off the cross, and they wiped it down, and the blood and sweat off of his body went into various containers. Well, Joseph had two of them. It's believed that Mary had one. It was an alabaster jar filled with the blood and sweat of Jesus, and Nicodemus also had one or two of his own, which he proceeded to actually embed in a sculpture that he did of the crucifixion, which was discovered later on. But you know, there's so many different legends of these cups and Holy Grail manifestations. It kind of leaves you with kind of an empty feeling of, well, is there truly a true Holy Grail? And if there is, where is it? You know?
Yes, exactly. And then, of course, with the movie coming out and the book, The Da Vinci Code, there's revealed to us another Holy Grail being, you know, the person herself of Mary Magdalene and the secret bloodline and the secret marriage. And, you know, this information is being widely assimilated by the mass consciousness at this point. It's not just... you know, the research that you have in your book, for instance, is superb and lends great credence to this theory as well. And I have a special message from Mary Magdalene that I would like to share at the end of the program. If there's time, I will read it, where she confirms that this is, you know, she doesn't talk about herself in terms of the Holy Grail, but she confirms the ancient bloodline. So, I mean, your research is superb. And a lot of people you know, the more fundamentalist groups and Bible studies and everything find this just horrific. But, you know, it's too bad because they don't seem to get it that a lot of the Bible was edited out early on. You know,
right.
And you went into that a little bit with your research, your fine research on the Knights Templar. So,
well, there's a whole alternate tradition that has run parallel to the Catholic tradition. According to my research, there were two lineages and two traditions that were founded by Jesus. There was the St. Peter tradition, which of course became the Catholic tradition, but there were also the St. John, Mary Magdalene tradition or line that became the Gnostic alchemical church, if you will, or tradition. And within that tradition was all the various alchemical practices you could perform in order to open yourself up to the pre-existent wisdom within your own heart, which is your own gnosis. And of course, the Catholics didn't like that tradition to coexist with them because they could, if that was the case, people were just going in and finding knowledge within themselves. They couldn't control what people were believing. And
well,
so
yeah,
for this reason, it had to go underground and become secretive.
Well, and also, it may have been somewhat inadvertent, although they were perfectly aware at the Council of Constantine, at the Nicene Council, rather, in about 350 A.D. or so, that there were these Gnostic Gospels in existence, the Gospel of Mary being one of them, the Gospel of Thomas being another. And oddly enough, they didn't like this idea of the Christ residing within one's own heart or inner wisdom, and finding one's own truth. They liked the idea better that one had to go to the priest to get the truth, because that instilled authority within
the church. Exactly, right.
So, you know, they did away with the Gnostic tradition, and they burned these people at the stake, and they committed all kinds of horrendous acts of murder in order to stamp out these secret things. And some of it, it was really, really gruesome what they did to the Knights Templar, who were, in my opinion, a wonderful order, and as your thesis puts out in the book, the actual guardians of the Holy Grail. What can you tell us about what you know about the Knights Templar? I know you did an extensive amount of great research, and what about their travel to Jerusalem, which is so interesting and exciting? Apparently they were there at the temple and they found some artifacts and things.
Right. Well, there's a lot we haven't known about the Templars because it's been secretive, and we believe a lot of that information is coming to light now. I just talked about the lineage, the Gnostic lineage, from Jesus through John the Apostle and Mary Magdalene. Well, we believe that lineage was actually inherited by the Templars, and they became the first secret society, so to speak, preserving and practicing that knowledge and that wisdom. All the other secret societies that came later on, Freemasons, Rosicrucians, Illuminati, were simply following the lead, if you will, of the Templars. Okay, they were all dedicated to preserving the alchemical wisdom and opening up themselves to the inner gnosis. The Templars supposedly, if you read your history books, it says that they were formed in order to protect pilgrims coming and going to the Holy Land. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense considering there were only 9 of them originally, and there was a lot of land that needed to be patrolled. There wasn't a lot that they could do. So what we're finding out is actually they didn't spend a lot of time patrolling the Holy Land. What they did is they started digging around the foundations of Solomon's Temple. Apparently, they knew there was something there, and in some places they dug down 20 feet or more straight into bedrock. So obviously, they knew that they knew something was there, or they wouldn't have put in that kind of an effort. Well, 9 years later, they left the Holy Land with 5 big boxes, and it's believed that those boxes are full of the treasures that they found digging around Solomon's Temple, as well as a lot of scrolls and documents that could be related to the Essenes, could be related to the marriage of Jesus and Mary, could also be related to this Gnostic lineage of John and Mary Magdalene. Well, these five boxes were taken up through Europe and into Scotland, and most recently, when ground scans were done on Roslyn Chapel, it was found that there are five big boxes
really?
Down there in the crypt
wow.
underneath Roslyn Chapel. So we believe this is where they ended up.
That's fabulous. Well, that wouldn't surprise me because I think you did an excellent job of scholarly exegesis in terms of tracing these various, and again, these are all secret societies that have held these Holy Grail relics throughout the centuries, and some of them have been on display in Roman Catholic churches, such as the one in Spain. I'm not remembering the name of that. If you could give me that name. Is it the Valencia Cup?
Valencia,
like that?
That's right.
Valencia Cup. That is believed by the Catholic Church to be the actual cup that Jesus used at the Last Supper. But, you know, these other five boxes, I mean, this the way you trace the history of the Templars, starting from the founding of the order, their journey into Jerusalem, and their digging around there at Solomon's Temple, and then coming back jubilant and being, you know, right into the right arm of the Pope himself, they certainly had something going for themselves, and they were certainly in the good graces of the church with whatever it is they had found. And yes, I agree with you. And then they had, I guess, a premonition when the Inquisition was starting. Was it Hugh de Payen? Was that the person that was persecuted and arrested by?
Well, it was actually Jacques de Molay.
Molay.
Yeah. Hugh de Payens was the first Temple Grand Master, and it was through him that the Sinclair line and clan was basically married to the Templars because he married into that line by marrying Catherine de St. Clair. So we believe this is, well, perhaps the main reason that those boxes, those treasures of the Templars ended up in Roslyn Chapel, which was built by the Sinclair clan.
So you're saying that first Templar actually married Catherine de St. Clair?
That's right. Yeah, according to the tradition.
I thought all of them were celibate, but you know.
Well, this is actually before. This is before he was a Templar. See, he ended up in the Holy Land during the First Crusade, rather, and right after that he went back into Europe, and it was at that time that he married Catherine de St. Clair, and then he returned to the Holy Land and then founded the Templars at that point. And actually, they didn't formally become monks until the Council of Troyes in 1128 A.D. This is a council that occurred when the Templars returned to Europe after 9 years of digging around Solomon's Temple, and the Pope and Saint Bernard were all present at this council, and it was at that time that they accepted their rule by which they were to live as monks, as a monkish order. But before that time, they weren't really living as monks.
They were just knights.
Yes.
And special knights as accessory to the pilgrims. Their stated overt objective, but there was something covert about their objective from the very beginning.
Well, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and they had some unusual practices that they developed over time, and then these practices were considered heresy by the Vatican, and then that's how this whole Inquisition stuff started. But it seems to me that they were actually in the Middle East long enough to have had, as you say, a contact with the Assassins, another Muslim order, and a Sufi, very enlightened group. And what I loved about your research was that you were able to take, you know, elements of various religious traditions all in the Middle East and, you know, show us how the Templars were influenced by other mystic tradition and amalgamated that into their teaching, for instance, the Assassins. If you could give us a little bit more of your scholarship on them.
Well, certainly, yeah. You know, one way you can find the influence of the Sufis and the Assassins and other mystical orders on the Templars is simply by reading over the Grail legends that were authored anywhere from the 12th to the 14th century, because if you read through those legends, you will find references to different figures or practices or philosophy that the Sufis and other mystical movements were practicing, were observing in the Middle East when the Templars were there. See, these Grail legends were actually written by Templars or people that were very much connected to the Templars. Cretin de Troyes, who wrote the first one, the definitive one, he actually grew up in Troyes, which was kind of like the headquarters of the Templars in Europe. And then Robert de Born, for example, who first talked about Joseph Arimathea and the cup as being the Holy Grail, it's believed that he was also a knight himself. And then you had Prelesphos, a legend that came right after that, which was actually authored in Glastonbury by also, is believed, a Templar knight. In terms of what the Templars received from the Assassins, it's hard to say. I mean, in some ways, they were identical orders. The Assassins wore an outfit that was a combination of white and red. I mean, it was almost impossible to differentiate them from the Templars themselves on the battlefield. You know, they also had three levels, just like the Templars did, three levels of initiation. They were very inclusive. They were they synthesized many different traditions. They were alchemists. They were Gnostics.
Yes, I know they were Gnostics, and this is very interesting because I think they were in touch with what might be called mystical Christianity or a higher order of understanding, which dates way back, apparently, even to India and Sanat Kumara and other figures.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Assassins were famous for their intake of hashish. Thus they have the name Assassins, which they believe comes from hashishians, you know. They called the hashish, they called it the flesh of Al-Qadir. That was their special name for it. Well, Al-Qadir is the name for the green man. And Al-Qadir is another name for Sanat Kumara. I mean, if you go to Sanat Kumara's main temple compound in Sri Lanka, you've got Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists all worshiping Sanat Kumara, although they're calling them different names. The Muslims are calling him Al-Qadir, and the Hindus are calling him Sanat Kumara.
Sanat Kumara, and I think very few in our listening audience have an idea maybe who Sanat Kumara is, but I was reading Andrea's bio here. Is Andrea on the line with us?
Not at the moment. Would you like to talk to her?
Well, not at the moment, but I want to at least emphasize that she mentions here in her bio that she has done some channeling work with both Sananda and Sanat Kumara. And I came across Sanat Kumara through the work of Dr. Joshua Stone in the IM University, and he said that Sanat Kumara was one of the biggest ascended masters and was overlighting the planet as a planetary logos.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read Andrea's bio, and she talks about, she said, interestingly enough, that Sanat Kumara and Sananda, meaning Sananda Jesus, are from the same soul. Is that what she was saying in her bio there?
Well, basically, Andrea learned or received messages or received the inspiration to channel the oversoul of the Kumaras when we were on Mount Shasta. It is a tradition that the Kumara masters, when they left Lemuria thousands, perhaps millions of years ago, they ended up inside the mountain itself. And so we went up there one day, and she just started channeling all this information, and the being that came through said that it was the oversoul, the higher soul of all the Kumaras, and the Kumaras collectively are what you call the sons of God. Kumara is a Sanskrit word meaning sons of God. I mean, they're essentially the sons of God you read about in the Bible.
So Jesus, you know, being in the Christian tradition, the second person of the Trinity, or son of God, is in another incarnation, in other words, with Sanat Kumara. So there's really not so much of a contradiction of theological. I mean, of course, what I'm saying is not going to agree with strict theological Christians, but those that have an open mind that are just becoming aware of work with spirit and work with the spiritual hierarchy and angels, I think will resonate with this information. Although this is very esoteric, it rings true for me, and I commend you for your excellent research and the fact that you can with an open mind, look at other spiritual traditions in the world from very ancient times, and somehow bring this knowledge into a synthesis, a fusion, which is done beautifully in your book, by the way.
Well, we
in
our
research.
Thank you. In our tradition, we believe that this Holy Grail lineage that became the Gnostic lineage with John the Apostle and Mary Magdalene actually started in the East, and the founder of it was Sanat Kumara. According to our tradition, he arrived here thousands, maybe millions of years ago with the sons of God, and they brought the teachings of enlightenment, of yoga, meditation, of alchemy. And Sanat Kumara came here and led the Kumaras with his brother, Sananda Kumara, which was the essence name or the essence form, if you will, the first form that Jesus took on this planet. And since that time, Jesus has incarnated a number of different times. Sanat Kumara, however, he's always stayed here. He merged his soul with the soul of this planet Earth, and he became what's known as the Green Man, which if you study the goddess tradition that preceded the Orthodox religions, it was the son of the goddess who was the original savior. And this was Sanat Kumara.
I have to say that that concurs completely with what I have read in the writings of the great master, Dr. Joshua Stone, who used to have the WESOC at Mount Shasta, of all things. Mark.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, he's the planetary Christ for the next 2,000 years. That's what it says on his website. And I had an encounter with him before he passed on, in which the angels came to me and said that this man is who he claims to be. And I would not be one to follow in anyone's particular spiritual tradition, being skeptical of all of them in a way now, because my path is strictly spirituality, although I resonate very strongly with Jesus and Jesus's group surrounding him. And of course my background is was Christian. I think that this this is an amazing insight that you've got about Sanat Kumara, Mount Shasta, and the energies at Shasta. And just last week, I had a message from Archangel Michael for our dearly beloved producer, Don Newsom. Don, are you listening there? You probably are. In which he was being asked to reignite some energies there because he lives in the Shasta region. So it's all very coming together in a beautiful way. And,
well, we believe in our tradition, and one of the reasons that we do exist and that our International Order of Gnostic Templars exists is to complete the work of the early Templars, which was to unite East and West spiritual traditions together. They tried to do it. They made the synthesis. They came back into Europe and tried to practice the synthesized rites. And of course, it wasn't time. If you weren't practicing Orthodox Catholic rites at that time, then you were a heretic, and that's what ended up happening to them, but we believe, and what we're trying to do is we are trying to find the link that links all the different traditions together today. And we believe this is where we are on the larger time scale. That we're now is the time to bring us all together, and we believe that the link that links so many of these traditions together is this being Sanat Kumara. He was the one that founded all these different lineages and traditions that have actually passed down to us today as many spiritual traditions, and even the Orthodox religions. This is why you find him as a major figure in Buddhism and Hinduism.
And in my work with Princess Diana, it is very political and very spiritual work that she's been doing for peace in the Middle East, and I think one of the reasons why your work is important and my work is important is because she's asking for a more unified spirituality to emerge for humanity that is not, killing in the name of God, that is not extremist in fundamentalism, and that basically she's correctly pointed out that fundamentalism has very little to do with truth, and the unfortunate consequence of fundamentalism is that it leads to extremism, and we see the sad effects of extremism in Iraq and now, of course, in the situation that's building between Israel and Palestine. So the more people are hung up on what it actually says in the Bible or in the Quran is a source of division among people. But what's beautiful about your work and about my work in my work with Princess Diana, with Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, the title of my book, is that this work needs to be unified. We need to come together as a humanity more now than ever to look for common ground and common leadership and abandon the idea completely that fundamentalism is going to get us anywhere. It just it isn't a practical application, and we see the horrific effects of it just by the false teaching that is being promulgated by all of the world's religions at this point, not just the Muslim religion, which, you know, and I don't want to alienate any listeners out there that may be strong in their religious point of view, but want to open your mind to the idea that all religions have a unique tradition that goes back to oneness, and we need to work on the idea of spiritual unity and oneness and get away from the idea of religious righteousness, which is
right.
ruining the planet. That is what Mother Teresa has said in her words to me, too.
Exactly.
Your work is really remarkable.
Right. Well, this is why we're having conferences around the world. Actually, starting next year, in the spring of next year, we're having a big conference in Lake Titicaca where we're bringing together all the Native American elders in North and South America.
I have been down to Titicaca and had a spiritual experience while I was visiting the Reed Islands down there. That's a beautiful place. And
yeah, it's very, very powerful.
Go ahead with your program. Tell us a little bit more about that.
The prophecy is that when the condor, which is the bird of South America, flies with the eagle of the north, then peace will reign throughout the planet. And we believe this is part of the fulfillment of that prophecy, to bring Native Americans from all over the Western Hemisphere down to Titicaca to come together to share their traditions and also to recognize how they're all similar, how many of them actually came from the same roots, came from the same place, but over time their traditions maybe have been revised or tweaked a little bit, so they look like they're different, but in essence they're really not.
Well,
and it's real symbolic to go down to Lake Titicaca, which is in Peru. It's believed to be the center of the goddess energy, and we believe that it's the revival of the goddess tradition that is generating these conferences where we can all come together to share and synthesize and reunite. Again, it's been the patriarchy that's separated us and shown us all our differences, but it's going to be the revival of the goddess. It's going to bring us together and show us what we have that's the same.
Yes, and you know, no better goddess than Mary Magdalene or Mother Mary or some of the others that I've heard from, Princess Diana for that matter too. You know, I want to mention before we go, because we're almost at, we are at the end of our show already, Mark. I'm really sorry this was so
certainly
short.
It's flown by.
But I will bring you back on our show another time. But before we go, I want to mention your website and your wife, Andrea Pinkham's website. She does the Da Vinci Code Journeys at www.DaVinciCodeJourneys.com. And her site is www.bodymindspiritjourneys.com. And your site, are you connected with those sites, Mark? In the bio info here.
Yes, but my main site these days is www.gnostictemplars.org.
Okay, wonderful. And we encourage our listeners to go out and pick up a copy of Mark Amaru Pinkham's book and to visit Andrea Pinkham's website, Director of Body, Mind, Spirit Journeys and Sacred Journeys. She's going to be co-hosting a very special journey on the Goddess and Mary Magdalene, and she's invited me to be a special speaker on that journey, and that's happening, I think, next May sometime. So if you are interested in that, we encourage you to visit her website, again, at Body, Mind, Spirit Journeys, and to also possibly send an email to me at dianaspeaks@hotmail.com. I'm going to be closing the program with a special message from, this is a message received from Mattia Michelson, while she was in form, and this was a message that I never had a chance to read from Archangel Michael, confirming the research that you, in fact, have done and many other pioneering spirituality authors have done concerning the Da Vinci Code. So would you mind if I read this message as kind of the last part of our program?
No, please do.
Okay, wonderful. And then I have one from Mary Magdalene, too, and then we'll close with our song. And again, we want to encourage our listeners to tune in to the songs that we have on our show by visiting 3W's The Stars Still Shine and the wonderful website of my dear friend Bob Murray, who channels the great John Lennon and George Harrison, and we feature their music each Sunday. Now, this is a message from Mattia that we didn't have a chance to cover on another of my programs devoted to the Da Vinci Code and the, not so much the Da Vinci Code, but the Gnostic Mysteries and the Holy Grail. So this fits right in with Mark's beautiful work. And this is her message, and it she's saying here. This is hers received from Archangel Michael. The Da Vinci Code is a work the author contracted to complete to assist the people of the world to open their minds and challenge traditional belief systems and bring forth more truth of what's transpired at that time. When studying Jewish history, most historians have found it more unusual that Jesus was not married at his age and at that time in Jewish history. In addition, Jewish tradition only allowed the wife or family members to go to the tomb, and that is why the first contact was made with Mary Magdalene as his wife. This was permissible. Again, this is Archangel Michael speaking. There is much controversy in your society as the Jesus you understand in the Christian religions of today has in essence been remade and the teachings of the Master altered by many who wrote of him but never met or learned his teachings firsthand. The closest book of truth of what was said by him is the original Gospel of St. Thomas. The patriarchal fathers who wanted to control the people through religion debased Lady Magda and turned her into a whore while they rewrote the Master's teachings to suit their need for power and control. It was a way of debasing the mother and negating the women's role in the Piscean Age. They also altered many of the original teachings, combining them with pagan rituals and beliefs of the time to bring more people to Christianity, and this is what we see today. There is little truth in today's teachings of Christianity, which was just an extension of the Jewish religion. Celibacy is something the Catholic Church added to Christian doctrine hundreds of years after Jesus walked the earth and led the people to believe they needed a priest or intercessor to speak with God, thus increasing the power of the Catholic Church, which it had over the people. So the Da Vinci Code is challenging many to move away from old belief systems within the Christian religion that have little basis in truth. For by simply questioning and asking if this is true, they open the door to move forward into the light. Those opposing this work and offended by it are just trying to keep Jesus as a separate special being, so they do not have to look at the truth or accept responsibility for their path, making him a deity to worship rather than the way-shower he came to be. He is our elder brother, and we are the sons and daughters of God, and he is showing us the way home. I encourage all of us to seek the truth for themselves and ask him personally for guidance and understanding in these matters. And this was Archangel Michael through Sananda, speaking through Jesus through Mattia Michelson. And I have one more lovely message from Mary Magdalene. And when I was doing my research on the Holy Grail mysteries for the show, she came through with a magnificent message. Are we at time, Don?
Yeah, we're just a couple minutes over.
We're what?
Just a couple minutes over.
Okay. All right. Do we need to go ahead and play the music then? Okay. That's our time. I'm sorry. I will read the Mary Magdalene message at another time, possibly next week. Please tune in next week for The Peaceful Planet. We thank you for listening. God bless, and keep it a peaceful day, and honor our planet in peace. Thank you again. Bye now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.